When NASA astronaut Roger K. Crouch tells people to never give up on their dreams, it's more than just a cliche or a nice platitude. When Crouch says never give up, he's speaking from firsthand experience. Crouch's dream was to fly, to be a pilot. But when Crouch was a young man, an unexpected diagnosis suddenly made that dream impossible.
I'm colorblind. And I didn't really know that until I was like a junior in high school or something like that. And I tried to join the NROTC program, which is a program where they'll pay you for being part of Naval Reserve while you're in college, and then they'll send you to flight school when you get out. And I took the written part of the test and physical, and when I finished the physical, the guy said, "Do you know you're colorblind?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, we don't want you in the Navy." And then I tried the Marines when I was a sophomore in college and couldn't get in them, and the Air Force, and none of that. And then I started planning to be an astronaut, and never heard from him for like 17 years actually. And I called him and I said, "Why am I not getting any response to my applications?" And they said, "Well, you're colorblind. We just throw it in the trash."
It seemed to be the end of his dreams. However, he did find one way to get into NASA. They hired him to be not an astronaut, but a scientist. He actually started in college.
They came to Tennessee Tech to do interviews, and I went down and talked to them, and I talked to them, and I talked to several different companies that came in to do research. And NASA had a program that they would allow you to work and go to school on weekends and evenings to get started in graduate school. And if you passed those courses, then they would let you go away for a quarter. Well, used to go in quarters, which was 3 month segments in college. And you could do that for a year and get a master's, or go for a little longer to get a PhD. And I was young and in love and wanted to get married and didn't want to have to live on graduate student salary at that time. And so it was just a good idea for me to go to work for NASA.
I asked Crouch exactly what gave him such a passion for science and education.
Well, that's a funny story. When I was in college and when I first went to work for NASA, I had a real bad inferiority complex. And I thought I was so stupid that someday somebody would find out how dumb I really was and I'd get fired. So I wanted to take all the courses I could and learn as much as I could just so that I'd become smarter than the average bear. I felt like I just didn't have a real good self-image back then. And so it was just a matter of trying to learn as much as I could. And then once I got into a PhD program working on my doctor's degree, I looked around and I said, these other guys don't know so much either, you know. And as a matter of fact, some of my friends are much smarter than colleagues I had when I went up to MIT for a while and came back to Langley where I was working in Hampton, Virginia. And I said, you know, you guys are a lot smarter than those guys at MIT. You need to give yourself more credit here.
Crouch worked as a NASA scientist for many years. He kept hoping somehow his NASA job would get him into space.
And then when I was 40 years old, I found out about a program called Payload Specialist. So the three kinds of astronauts are pilots and commanders that come out of the military, and their job is to take the shuttle or spacecraft into orbit and bring it back home. They're career astronauts called mission specialists, who are either scientists or engineers or doctors or something. And their job is to do the science experiments that are on board or to keep the spacecraft running properly, do maintenance and so forth. And then every once in a while, there'll be a series of experiments or one experiment that's so complicated that it's easier to train a scientist to fly on the shuttle than it is to train an astronaut to do the science. And they'll let a civilian scientist go. And that program's called a payload specialist. And so when I heard about that, turns out the qualifications for that don't require normal color vision. And so I started applying for that, and almost 16 years later, I finally got picked to fly. So I was almost 56 when I got picked.
That really is a tremendous amount of persistence. What kept you going all those years?
I think my mom. She's one of the most stubborn people I've ever known in my life. And she's just indomitable. Her spirit is absolutely marvelous. And she just doesn't let things get her down. And so for me, even training as a backup payload specialist, it was a thrill to do that. It's like having an e-ticket to Disney World, except you got to ride on everything except Space Mountain, you know. And that's not all bad. And so I just thought that it was all new adventure for me. I just loved doing it. And I love doing science. And again, this sense of exploration, doing science that nobody's ever been able to do before, and getting results and understanding that nobody's ever had before, was a driver for me.
Okay, this is the entity conducting launch status check. All stations verify, ready to resume count, and go for launch, OTC.
Finally, in 1997, after a lifetime of waiting, Crouch boarded Space Shuttle Columbia.
9, 8, 7. Ignition sequence start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And liftoff of Space Shuttle Columbia with the Microgravity Science Laboratory, our research bridge to the space benefits of tomorrow.
You're lying on your back, 3 times the force of gravity. Your lungs are pressed against your rib cage so hard that they're flattened out kind of partially. And then when the 3 main engines shut off, the cushions in your seat just sort of push you up against your harness and you unbuckle and just float up out of your seat.
Columbia's 3 main engines is now throttled back to 2/3 throttle to prepare the spacecraft to pass through the area of maximum air pressure and go supersonic.
You go around the world every 90 minutes. And so we'd been working for about an hour and a half, and the pilot called down and says, "Hey, we're back over Florida." And we went floating up to the flight deck where there's some windows that you can look at. And we were oriented in a direction that there's only one window that you could look down and see Florida. And I was the last person up there, and there were 7 of us on board. So I couldn't get to the window. And I turned around and started back down, and then I looked out the window out over the Atlantic Ocean, and you could just see the blackness of space. You could see the Earth's atmosphere that's about maybe as thick as a 50-cent piece. And then 1/3 of the Earth's curvature in front of you, and the Atlantic Ocean and the clouds. And I was just stunned. And it seemed like I was just frozen in time for a long time. And it's just awesome. It's just an incredible view when you're up there.
For Around and About, I'm Michael Edward Miller.